Please listen carefully.
And now, live from Arrakis, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys trying to keep sand out of their shorts, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, we are doing a roundtable assumption of Dune Part 2.
Part 2.
And here with us is that guy Brad, our announcer.
Hey there.
And not Scott in the booth.
Good to be with you.
And the reason why they're both here is because we were all at the movies together, the four of us, and we just got finished watching it. So this is an immediate assumption.
It was a movie, dude. It was a great time. It was fun to go to the movie theater with you guys.
That's right. Good always times. Fun. Always good times in the theater.
Spoilers.
What did we go see?
Spoilers Kevin? Will abound. I just said what
did
we
you
wanted.
Say?
Yes.
You say oh, well, can we take that part
Should
out?
We
nope.
Play it back? No, leave it
nope.
in. This is great.
That's staying in.
Clueless Scott is
so
one of
So what did
my
we go see again?
Dune Part 2.
Part 2.
You were there, right? I
yes.
thought I saw him in the
theater. Yes, I was there while you were sleeping.
The continuation of Dune
I only
Part...
I fell asleep like four times. Don't get ahead of us.
Yeah, the continuation of Dune Part 1, directed by Denis Villeneuve. Even though there's way more letters in his name.
Oh, is that how you say
that.
It?
Yes. You're supposed to do the French way and leave out a bunch of letters.
Yeah.
That's it.
You didn't even say the V.
Nope.
No, it's very strange. We just got done seeing it about 45 minutes ago.
All 168 minutes of it.
Yeah. It was long, but so was the first part.
True.
And there will be a third part.
There's got to be.
Who knew that going in? That's my real
yes.
quick, immediate question. Who
I
knew this?
It.
Who thought part two was the ending, or who knew there was going to be a part three?
No, I didn't see how there was any way.
Okay.
I didn't know.
I did not know there was a part three.
Fair enough.
But there is a part three, huh?
It's the next book. That
oh, I was about to say, they're kind of done with this book.
Yeah, they were.
Pretty much.
He was, but... They're going to do the next book now. Well, it was called, like, I forget what it's called.
Children of Dune, Children Messiah of Dune.
No, yeah, Messiah.
Yep.
Dune, Messiah, something like that.
Yep.
But yeah, so Dune 2, Dune
Part 2.
Dune Part 2.
Dune also.
where did we leave off with Dune Part 1?
I believe
it stopped like right in the middle of the movie.
Yes.
But it was in the middle of a 2.5 hour movie. It just stopped.
It was at the end of Act One. Paul Atreides, our protagonist, through, I would imagine, all three parts. but no, he's the main guy, and we leave off with him. He gets captured, rescued by the Fremen. Taken in by the Fremen, along with his mother, Mother mm-hmm. Superior.
Yeah.
Mother May I. And they get taken in by the Fremen, and then that sort of was the goal. I mean, in the first movie, we're learning about Paul Atreides and
yeah.
his royal bloodline that has political intrigue behind it, but he was always the weird one, and there was whispering of the Messiah, and part of that prophecy was him being taken in by the Fremen, and that's where we leave off, is mm-hmm. the end of the first movie, and he's gazing into the eyes of Zendaya and seeing visions and going, I don't know what to do, in his very Timothy Chalamet way.
It's hard not to stare into the eyes of Zendaya.
okay. They are quite blue
she's,
in this.
She is easy on the eyes. I'd say that.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
She's a charming single-name individual.
Yes. But as far as like opinion on Dune is where we left off, I believe we had saved expectations for part two to come out, but I remember really liking part one.
You gave it the 5 slices supreme.
Supreme makes sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 probably because I was waiting to fill in the rest of the pizza with this.
I gave it 8 cheese.
Yep.
Waiting for the toppings. I really enjoyed Dune part one. I said it was one of the best sci-fi movies I'd seen in a long time.
There you go.
I'd agree with that. The first one was fantastic. I wasn't able to weigh in on that first podcast. But, yeah, I would have definitely given it an 8. I don't know what toppings I would have put on it, but it would have been 8 slices, I'm sure.
Fair enough.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it did its world building in a very economical way, giving you the parts you needed, gave you your information downloads, and kept the story moving along.
Were you a Dune head going into this version of it?
many, many, many years ago, I read the story like one time.
Yep.
Or started to read it and got most of the way through it. And
it's one of those ones like, if you're going to be a nerd and you like sci-fi, you got to read Dune.
You got to read Dune. That's right.
That's true.
Yeah, we have to mention that in our first assumption we did of this, we had our Dune expert, Ralph,
right.
And one of our great fans and friends was with us. And he enjoyed it. He gave it a half of a meat lover's pizza, waiting to see the second half.
Okay.
And we will, when we give our review at the end, our pizza rating, he actually texted us his pizza rating because he wasn't able to see it with us, but he did indeed see it.
He was excited. He's the Dune fan.
No one asked me because I wasn't around for that particular episode, but I would have given it 4 burnt slices that you go to reheat in the oven that you forget or in the oven because you fall
were
asleep.
Were they burned at first or did
them?
You burn them
no,
on
no,
the
No, you cooked them on the reheat. Overcooked them on the reheat because he fell asleep. Because unfortunately, the first movie took me 3 tries to get through.
Yes.
Watching in the theater? You went three times?
No.
Saw it
at home.
Fair enough.
Saw
it on streaming.
3 different times. To me, it was the, and we'll get into this later, it was the sound effects. It was the soundtrack. It was the droning. It was the large amounts of time where nothing happened. You know, I appreciated the exposition. I appreciated how it set up the story and told us what we needed to know, but I found the first one a little slow.
You didn't need the gravitas.
No.
And it made you fall asleep like one of those like little sound machines.
Like a brown noise machine.
A brown noise machine, yeah.
Yes, it put me to sleep. Yeah. Like a Dune noise machine.
Dare I ask if you were a Dune head before falling asleep in part 1?
I was. I've seen, you know, of course, the original, the David Lynch one. I've seen the TV miniseries one that we had in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I've read at least the first 6 books. I read all the Frank Herbert books. I might have read 1 or 2 of the Brian Herbert books, but in a very Tolkien way, you know, where the son takes over the writings of the father.
Yeah.
The fathers, are so much better. It much like Planet of the Apes, several of the books eventually, you know, thousands of years pass, and you're, you know, it's above the planet of Dune and beneath the planet of Dune.
In between
the
planets
of
Dune.
And yeah, so it starts to get really weird.
Yeah, there are a bunch of books out there, but Frank only did the first couple of what?
Yeah, Frank did like the first 6, and I swear I think there's up to 20. The fans can correct me.
There you go.
Correct me.
But now we have about 6 hours worth of New Dune.
Yes. We open up basically where we left off with good old Tim Chalamet / Paul Atreides.
He's really more of a Timothy. Yeah. You can't call that guy Tim.
Timmy.
He's Timothy.
Sorry, that's my northeastern Italian upbringing.
Hey Tim.
Everyone gets their name shortened to the nickiest name that you can make it.
Nah, Timmy.
Hey, what up, Timmy? It's Timothy with 2 E's and an accent above it.
How do you feel about Kevy?
Whatever, Timothy.
Kevin-y.
Kevin-y?
Kevy.
No one ever called me that.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I think my wife calls me that.
There you go.
Yeah, sometimes.
Uh-oh, you learned a secret sweet name for him. Just like Timothée Chalamet, his real sweet name is actually Mothay.
Mothay.
Yeah, he goes by Mothay. If you know him, don't tell him Moe people that, but that's how it is.
Him and Topher.
Not Mothy?
Him and Topher Grace.
But yeah, Paul Atreides, we're right back into it. There's no time jump. I was a little confused at first because it seemed like there was like spice hallucinations and they were kind of playing with time. There's no title card. It really is like you should have paid attention to the first movie because here we go.
Kind
with
of a
part
cold
2.
Open.
And the first movie I felt really paralleled the book really well.
Mm-hmm.
I would not say that about this one.
Yeah.
Because in the book... correct me if I'm wrong, but like years go by, and that's what I thought they were like left it off at right at a time jump in the book because the book jumps ahead like 2 years and little sister's born and she's
yes,
does it?
But yes, we already have the
I don't even know, you know what,
Quizzak Cataract or whatever.
I don't even,
it's already out.
I don't even remember reading it. I don't even know if I ever read it.
Well, and remember in the first movie, remember that creepy little girl is already there, you know, or not already there, she's by the second act. There's the little kid.
Yeah.
We only have we only realize that the mom's pregnant like halfway through the first act.
And in this one, the entire movie takes place in the next 9 months after Atreides falls.
That's what I was curious about, because like they did introduce the pregnancy aspect, and they condensed it by making communication a thing, which is creepy and, I guess, novel. But yeah, they put a time frame on it. So that was one thing I kept checking. I was like, that was my time frame. Like, have we jumped in time? No, baby's still there. No baby being born. So
right. Yeah, I found myself doing the same thing. I was like, wait a minute. There's supposed to be a time jump here.
Wow. See, and my ignorance of said book didn't bother.
And also human biology.
But I mean, what do you talk, what do you mean? Kevin
didn't realize it was only 9 months that took place over the course of this movie.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying, I didn't know there was supposed to be a born kid, because maybe I read it. I don't remember. I think maybe I did. I forget things.
Well, yeah, and in the book, I thought the movie kind of cheapened Chani.
How so?
She's like angry. And all of her...
That's the actress.
Most of her scenes, he's just really angry.
That's the actress.
And that's not what you get in the book at all. She's like, hey, I get you're like the big guy. And in the book, she's kind of like a concubine. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mikey? Supportive. She's like a concubine. In this book, she's like, oh, well, I don't share. Well, kind of like my wife.
Yeah.
My wife were in Dune, she'd be Johnny.
What?
Pretty much.
Okay.
It was a little personal detail, but I'm with you. I'll get into my nitpick now, I guess, because this is kind of apropos. But so the overall arc is this is, now that we know there's a part three in Dune, this is act two of a three-act thing.
Yeah.
So this is the middle chunk of what we're getting, and we should be getting more of Chani and Paul and their relationship, but it seems like that sort of was just left to the audience to just buy into. It never really develops. Like, there's a lot of jumps there. And I mean, Zendaya is nice to look at. Timothy Chalamet, super charming. They make sense as a couple on screen. But I think I don't know. My nitpick is that they relied on that, and they don't really give us too much to work with in that relationship. You get knowing looks that you're supposed to interpret, which I get. That's more for the audience to play with, but as far as like their relationship, it is like it is expecting you to know Dune already.
Well, what would you have liked to have seen? Because I don't think I know Dune already.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Go for it.
So let me ask you: did you believe that relationship that Paul and Chani had in that movie?
Yeah, because they're both super hot.
Yeah, and but half of them is really grumpy.
Yeah, she was really grumpy.
Yeah, well, some guys like that.
That's your thing. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, that's just what does it.
It's hard times in the desert.
Yeah, man.
I'll put rough. That on a throw pillow.
But there, that's why does he? I guess I had trouble buying the motivation.
Hey, man, the heart wants what the heart wants.
In it's the true. Books, in the desert, it develops her role much, and his becoming the Messiah, she's a big part of that.
Yeah,
she kind of helps show him the way.
Right, and in the movie, I didn't get that at all.
What I sort of, how I justified it as it was appearing before me is that Denis Villeneuve is, like, he's condensing. He's telling a very efficient Dune story, and I know that's weird to say for a three-hour movie, but he's trying to
get nothing about what we just saw was efficient.
But the dialogue, in a sense, is. 'Cause
2 hours and, like, 45 minutes.
True.
That's like four naps in Brad time.
Yeah, for a bunch of books. But for the dialogue we do get, it is really heavy beats on the relationship that they're supposed to have. Like, she starts giving them crap about, oh, but you're a duke and you're from houses. Like, that's the stuff, that's the relationship you're supposed to know about. She is the grounding force to Paul. She helps him not want control and not fulfill the prophecy. Like, that's her.
Sure. Well, she doesn't necessarily believe in it, right?
Exactly. And
she's
obviously
part of the other group that doesn't believe in any of this stuff.
And you get the sense of that. I mean, she's sitting in a little tent while his mom's having the prophecy, and she's like, oh, this is all garbage and you're silly.
I got that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and that, like, those little moments do convey that, but they're like, it's very efficient. It's just those little moments, and if you aren't paying attention to them, I think you might miss it.
But what did you want to see in the relationship?
Just more of that, more of them having those quieter moments. It's all okay. It's very big set pieces for this, which is
I have a feeling that if there was more of those quieter moments, Brad would have been asleep more.
It's true.
Even more.
It's true.
Yeah. I will, Mikey touches on something that I will address. The movie expects you to bring something here. Like, you have to have brought something with you. Like, there no Dune green person could sit down and watch this movie.
Wait, I'm Dune green.
There is a green person here.
Well, I'm just saying. I really feel like you had to have brought some knowledge of the world.
If I read Dune, it was in like 90 or 91, and I can't remember any of it.
Okay.
And I saw that really bad movie and thought it was terrible, and so I was like, Dune sucks.
That movie wasn't very terrible. It was very 80s.
Well, I know, but that movie made me go, Dune sucks. So I just didn't really pursue it.
That movie has its own kind of charm.
Yeah, but it was one of those things where everyone's like, oh, Dune, it's classic, whatever. And I'm like, okay, whatever you say.
Yeah.
It was very much of its time.
I'm just going to stay over here in Star Wars land.
Do you feel like the first movie prepared you enough as far as
I give the first movie eight
the houses
slices.
And the dynamics and the...
Yeah, I got it.
Who the various characters were.
I think that I got it because I'm so steeped in sci-fi, and so much sci-fi was influenced by Dune. Like, if you know, like, Mech Warrior,
sure,
you know houses.
Absolutely.
You know, it influenced so much stuff that everything in it is familiar. There's some Warhammer 40,000 in there.
Very much
There, like I said, there's Mech Warrior in there. There's a little bit of Star Wars in there. All that stuff is in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it.
Okay. And what's interesting is that all of this predates all of those
things. No, I know. It influenced all those things. So it's kind of like being into grunge, which I was, and then listening to the bands that grunge was influenced by, like the 70s classic rock bands.
There you go.
And going like, oh yeah, okay, I hear the grunge in there.
Okay. I like that. That's well put.
But yes, maybe if someone was like sci-fi green, they might have been confused, but I had a lot of buy-in. The first movie gave me tons of buy-in. I really enjoyed it. It was the sci-fi I didn't realize I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So this was just a continuation of it. I was just enjoying it because I'd enjoyed the first one, really. I don't know if it's the spent cost fallacy or whatever they call that.
Sure. You've already invested time into
it.
Right. Oh, better enjoy this. I'm here.
But yeah, it made sense to me.
Okay, good.
Like all of us are saying, it is almost a Tarantino, like, oh, here comes part two. Like almost like they did with Kill Bill. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, we're just picking up right
surprise,
where we left
it's
off.
Here. Yeah. Boom.
Disregarding that, you know, there's been a year and change between, almost 2 years and change.
Yeah, 2 years and change.
So...
But I kind of like that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it was really quick to get back up to speed, but it did take me a second.
Well, sure. And I think it would take everyone a second. It kind of did me a little bit, too. But it's kind of like when you watch one season of a show and then it comes back. And then you have to remember what happened in the season before.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
And that's usually why they used to do recaps before to help
Previously
you.
Previously on X-Men.
Love the recaps.
But... I appreciate recaps, but I also don't like them because lazy, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. They weren't like, you know, here's a quick flashback, you know.
No, that's true. There was none of that.
No.
They did in this one what they did in the first one that we liked. I remember us saying that we liked is that they just keep showing us stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's none of they don't explain much of anything.
No, you were kind of shown about the houses, and that was all the explanation you got is that there's all these various classes and they hate each other.
I mean, the most explanation you got in the first one was him watching his little vids and that talked about the sand walk.
Yep.
Worm walk, whatever that's called, and talked about how, and then he was training with his guys, and they talked about how shields work and all that kind of stuff.
We probably could have used a little bit more about the Harkonnens and the Fremen, and why do they hate each other, and why are they fighting? I mean,
though that was in the first one.
The story.
I mean, they're pulling spice from their world. They took their world over. They're the natives,
right,
who are getting displaced by the colonists. It's classic historical. Stuff.
Resources, our stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this tale is old as time.
Is this in the future or in the past, though? How old is the Dune tale
it's
of time?
It's not a musical, though.
Well, I would say, all right, well, Dune, one of the big messages from the book of that Frank Herbert wrote was, it was very anti-industrialism. It was very of the native of the earth, that kind of bent, what the Freeman was. I didn't get any of the anti-capitalism, anti-industrial kind of stuff that I think Herbert was intending in the book. I didn't get a whole lot of that struggle here in this movie, or in either one of these two movies.
That's valid.
That was a message that I think I got kind of lost on.
Oh, I guess so. I mean, the message to me was like, was pro natives of the, like, this is our world. It's been colonized. Let's uncolonize it. Let's take our world back. That's kind of what I got out of it.
It is more it is more people based for sure.
Story of the Ewoks.
Well, true. And but it always is the culmination. It always does come down to the spice. I mean, there is a big focus on the prophecy for part two, but the whole first movie was a battle over the spice field and taking down that base. And then, like, with all the machinations that we get, the main thing, it was so funny. It's like, I'm going to overthrow this person, or I'm going to do this plan to get this. And the biggest threat in this movie is, let them know that I have nukes trained on the spice fields. And that's the most deciding factor, you know, that is the end all be all is who controls the spice. So I still think that was the head king, but I get what you're saying. It is more of a focus in the books and more of a background arc for here.
Were there nukes in the books?
It's always a weapons arsenal. I don't know if they were ever specified as nuclear.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah, I don't.
The book at all.
Yeah, I don't remember any of the book. That's my problem.
That's the problem.
But just like part one, this part two looks amazing.
Yeah, it looks so cool.
Greg Fraser is the cinematographer, and he just continues to knock it out of the park.
I have total buy-in into the world. Nothing looks...
No, it's visually stunning, that's for sure.
I believe in the sandworms. I believe in the mining vehicles. The ornithopters are still awesome, but all that stuff was in the first one too. So that's just a continuation of awesomeness.
It was cool to see how they leveled it up, because the first part gave us the ornithopters, but now we get hot air balloons carrying in tanks.
Yes,
that was in the first part.
True, but now we get to see the machinations of it. It's okay, you're used to these, so we'll use them a little bit more.
They leveled up the spice harvesters.
Yeah, exactly.
Now they have big spider legs on them.
Yeah, those are the Harkonnen spice.
So were the bombs like magnets?
Oh, the plates coming out of the sand?
The mines. They were mines.
Yeah, they were kinetic or something.
They're like magnetic mines.
Had to be mines. Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah, it seemed like they were buried about 2 feet down in the top of the sand. And then once the tank was close enough, just instant attracted mine. That was a cool battle tactic.
The return of Gurney and all that stuff.
Yeah, all of the combat stuff was awesome. I thought it was great.
Any particular standout scenes?
Standout fight scenes.
Action set pieces?
I have to take a shower because I feel really gritty.
Yeah, I found myself thinking a lot about how they keep sand out of their shoes.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, sometimes you're walking around. I know.
Well, we do say them layer up appropriately, but it's interesting to see, the people that aren't native to Arrakis, you see where their suits fail. The Emperor's Knights and the Harkonnen Knights. I'm going to say Harkonnen. I know that's wrong.
Sure.
But that's my brain. It's Harkonnen. It's not Harkonnen. Sorry.
Okay. Tomato, tomato, buddy. Do what you want.
But we get to see sand dripping out of theirs and how it's so heavy and clunky, and you just see the Fremen tripping them and running around them. It is pretty cool to see it's never explained, but it's just logical and makes sense. These are natural people that are fighting in their element versus interlopers.
They got sand snorkels.
I have mentioned this before, though.
That was my favorite. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, that sand snorkel thing.
That was my favorite fight scene, the sand snorkel one. The initial scene where Zendaya's got the rocket launcher and that guy comes up to her and she's just like, I'll just use the rocket on you. And that was awesome. That whole thing, I'm going to run out and distract them so you can get a shot on him. And then the leg starts moving. He's like, oh, crap.
I'll need Scotty's help on this before I get too pedantic. Do they say shit in Dune?
I don't think so.
Okay.
You're going to have to bleep that one, Mikey.
I know. Pardon. I'll say it one more time. Yeah, so yeah, cover your ears.
They say beep in Dune.
But Timothée Chalamet says the S word.
Oh, he does. That's right.
And not that I have a problem with vulgarity, but I was just like, that's
anachronistic? Is that what it is? Where
a little bit.
What do you want him to say? Drek?
Chazbot.
Wait a minute. Chazbot. Isn't it supposed to? But wait, anachronistic. Frack. Isn't it supposed to be the future?
It's tens of thousands of years in the future.
Okay, so why can't they use?
And it's never
our slang
addressed. In the, I could be wrong again. Write us an angry email. Somebody sitting at home punching the dashboard of their car, you know, just angry about this. But in the first several books, it's never clear, like, what happened to Earth. Is this even the same universe as Earth? But mm-hmm. later on, they try to equate it, like, you know.
Is that after Herbert was dead, though?
Earth. I don't know. I don't remember. I need an expert to shout it out. But supposedly, there's references back to Earth and the Bene Gesserit, like, have a fork or some ancient thing that they keep, you know, that's not true. I think it's artwork, but that they reference. But supposedly later there's references to it, the fact that it's still.
And I'm not really mad about it. I did notice it, though.
My point is, I think it's fascinating that there is a chance that ancient Earth invectives could exist thousands of years into the future.
Then you can say the S word. Okay.
People don't have to run around saying Felder Garb.
So that was
Frack.
That was my favorite fight scene, was that snorkel attack on the mining vehicle. What was your favorite fight scene?
That was a great open too. When you do see the snorkel, you're like, what is that? And then it starts breathing. You're like, yeah.
That was fun.
What was your favorite fight scene, Mikey?
It's probably going to be a battle, though. The scope of the clash of that fight, it is the final plan. It's the three-pronged attack. You're coming in from east, north, and west. Yes. And just seeing its armies on massive scale on a planet, like, you think it's a barren desert, but they actually, it's the scope of this movie astounds me. And when it goes that big and it all makes sense and you get to watch it, I really like that.
Yeah. What about you, Brad? Did you have a favorite fight scene?
Not specifically fight scene, but I think I enjoyed the first time he mounted the worm.
Oh, it's the sandworm.
That whole interaction. First time it went worms.
It looked way better than the 80s one.
Yeah, definitely. It was a completely different take on it, too, kind of, the way it worked.
Yeah.
And the way the worms worked. And I thought that was an interesting take.
Yeah, I kind of liked how you, like, they had to, like, get the grappling hooks in his gills or whatever, yes, I guess.
That's in the book, place. Though.
So, yeah. Oh, really?
That's how you control them. That's how you make peace with
them. Yeah, that's in the book, though. And that's how they steer them. They hook them, and they have gills. They have... It doesn't call them gills,
whatever.
More like a vent.
It's their rib plates.
But
it's
was
the rings
and when they pry them back, it forces them onto the surface.
Yeah,
and
but they really specifically showed how it worked.
Yes, and yes, I thought that was cool. Very cool. It was very book appropriate. For
what
sure.
was your favorite action or fight scene?
I would say
you're the fight scene guy.
I'll go with the final fight between Paul and Fade Rotha.
Sting? Wait, no, not Sting. Sorry.
I
will kill him.
He's way better than Sting.
I would say they
hang on.
Really nailed Fade Rotha from my visual of the books of what Fade was like. And Fade shows up way earlier in the books. But yeah, he's a psychopath.
Yeah.
I thought the black teeth was
That was a nice
really
choice.
Really like creepy.
A cross between Voldemort and Lex Luthor from the new Superman.
And hairless? It's weird.
Yeah, I see black teeth. It makes me think of the Penguin from Batman.
Yes, oddly enough.
I can't think of the Penguin from Batman without thinking about the funeral scene.
I'm glad they finally gave a close-up enough that I could see his teeth were black. Because at first I thought he was...
Did he just not have teeth?
No, at first I thought he was wearing a mouth guard when he was fighting. I thought he had like one of those football mouth guards.
Seventh grade football mouth guard.
I thought, he's taking his teeth safety really seriously while he's combating these guys.
But and I thought that fight between the two of them was very well choreographed. Was very fast.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It had a lot of action, a lot of movement in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it still had a real visceral, brutal part to it when he throws him on the floor and he got stabbed twice. I don't remember him getting stabbed so many times in the book.
He's already come back from the dead.
That was a good one. Yeah.
Yep.
He can't die. No, it is very visceral because they take their shields off, so it is the almost not unheard of, but the uncommon hand to hand, like, oh, this is face to face. This is even how the Fremen do it. And so you feel those punches.
Which addresses
really cool.
Another thing, like those shields, it's just another thing where they don't overly explain it to you. It's there, it's in the movie, and blink and you'll miss it, but the way the shield works, especially in the early scene in the Colosseum, where he eventually takes the shield off. You know, but you see the first couple of people he fights, he's got the shield on, then he takes it off, and you realize that it's, you know, it was kinetic, and it, you know, it will stop the. That's why you can't just shoot these guys.
Yep.
That's why the bullets or projectiles don't do anything. It's got to be a slow moving weapon. That was addressed in the Lynch one from the 80s,
and in, in part one, but only in two dialogues.
Yeah, it was addressed in part one real quick.
Yeah, but again, in part one, they didn't overly explain it either.
Yeah, well, I also, and they did, I like how, if anything needed to be explained, they do it really quick in a conversation that made sense.
Yes.
Because in that fight scene that I like that they were talking about, that big battle scene where they're taking out the mining vehicle, she shoots a missile at the ornithopter, and it just hits the shield and just, it doesn't do anything. And then he's like, you have to wait till, he's like, you have to wait till they shoot. Because then they can't shoot through the shield because the shield is like a thing that envelops it. So they have to turn the shield off to shoot.
And logics. Oh, I love it.
But the beauty is that the but she does like a, I know that. You know, like, yeah, like she's like, stop totally. Mansplaining to me, Paul.
Just Muffy.
Maybe, mouse maybe rat, that's why whatever. She's so angry.
Paul Muffy.
Yeah. Paul Muffy.
I'm sorry.
That's why she's so angry. She wants to call him Paul Muffy.
Mladib.
But speaking of fade, I had no idea that was Elvis. I know I had no idea that was right. Austin Butler. Sorry,
that's Elvis.
Really funny. Yes.
Do you know? I'll say they did the Tom Hanks Elvis movie, right?
And the yeah. I saw that.
I saw that movie.
It.
I was aware of it, but I never saw
I saw it.
Austin Butler was Elvis.
It's fine,
and he was fade. So I had no idea that guy had that much range.
Also funny because apparently that guy's had a hard time coming out of the Elvis character.
Yeah.
And has brought it into his into the Band of Brothers show with the with them flying and he's still doing the Elvis thing.
Yeah, he still sounds like Elvis.
Yeah, Austin Butler was surprising. And so what did you guys think of that Colosseum and the change for Harkonnen Harkonnen? Because it was like
we're at Gaiety Prime.
Yeah, yeah. What'd you think of Gaiety Prime?
Yeah, that's what I, cause I want to say when my wife found the old 80s one on like Netflix or something. And so she watched it and all I could think of was that scene from that one. And
bring me the floating fat man.
It's terrible. That particular, now my wife thinks it's great cause she loves the old 80s camp thing, yeah. But that, what's in the movie, the new one tonight that we saw, that's way more like what my headcanon had for that fight scene.
And that's the Baroness, our buddy Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
Looking all melty and slimy.
Yeah.
However you say his name.
I just like it. He just looks like old Marlon Brando to me.
He is great. He was so wonderful in Andor. Yeah. He's such a great actor. Immersive. And to take on this role and to be this fat blobba jabba, you know.
He's taken so many weird like bit parts though that I think that guy loves having fun. Because really, like, yes, as the leader of Harkonnen, he is menacing and grotesque. But the actor just got paid to put on a bunch of weird looking makeup and sit in a bathtub.
Yeah, six or eight hours of makeup every day,
just suspended on wires and carried around
to do this.
That's a cush gig. I'll take
that. And deliver Shakespearean lines.
I don't know if that makeup probably isn't very cush.
Yeah, it did look like it was all twisted and
I'm
bundled
sure it's
up.
Not very. Fun.
I mean, yeah. Speaking of the casting here, well, there's a few new ones. I mean, we get Florence Pugh shows up as the
love her.
Charming. So cool. I love Florence Pugh so much.
We've all agreed that's collective crush.
Sorry.
Yes.
She didn't have pockets in this one, but she did have a lot of fancy headdresses.
Yeah. She is a great actress.
Yes,
I almost threw the word little in there.
A lot of fancy head clothes.
That felt belittling, and I don't mean it like that. I mean, like, she is of smaller stature.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. She's tremendous. What a great little actress.
But
there I did it.
As far as casting, like we had mentioned in the previous one, I mean, most of the people are back. There's not a whole lot of new ones.
Yep.
Yeah.
Other than the Baron nephew and the prince.
Baron.
Is she a princess?
Emperor's daughter.
Daughter. They called her something. Yep. They had like a name for her, like a title. And then, okay, here's one of my big nitpicks. You ready? Don't cast Christopher Walken in anything.
Oh God! You just
unless he needs to be Christopher Walken.
He is just kind of
because
you know
never
just,
he
hey,
can't
not see Christopher Walken.
He can't.
It's unfortunate. Yeah, it really is.
I mean.
I hid this uncomfortable hunk of metal.
But you know what made you?
Maybe we could send an assassin.
You know what made up for it, though, was Javier Bardem.
Well,
was wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
He is wonderful.
Almost unrecognizable. But then
he's wonderful, but I just
Christopher Walken.
He cannot be Christopher Walken.
Right. No.
And at this point he's like, ever since More Cowbell happened,
yeah,
he was in my mind he was ruined for anything other than
Cowbell cast.
If you just need Christopher Walken as Christopher Walken or a character who
I can't not
see him as Christopher Walken.
And it bumps you out. I agree with you.
It 100% bumps me out. Like we were saying, Florence Pugh, when I see her up there, I don't go, oh, that's the new Black Widow. I just go, oh, that's the Emperor's daughter. I mean, she just owns it. Like you said, a great actress. But Christopher Walken, I'm like, oh my God, he's going to say things. And I knew as soon as it came out, I'd be like, I'm the emperor. It's just like, it's like
every time you talked, you giggled.
Yes, a little bit. Why?
I'm sitting there watching it, it's like, so now I'm dealing with, it's Christopher Walken being Christopher Walken. And then I get Kevin going,
You got Brad snoring.
I was like, oh yeah, Kevin's got the same problem I got.
You
bonded.
Well, much like the sets were very well designed in places and the costumes were very great, it felt like there was very little effort put into Christopher Walken. I felt like he was sitting there in his boxers and a tank top. You know,
is it that Denis Villeneuve, he's like, oh, I always want to work with Christopher Walken.
There it is.
That's got to be what it is, right? These guys just get him because he is Christopher Walken. But there are so many other actors of his generation that would have fit better in there.
Okay, I can see that.
A gabillion of them.
Yeah.
And
who would you have rather seen? Let's do a Kevin recast. Who would you recast?
Okay, well, let's think of actors of his generation that probably wouldn't have bumped me. If you put another actor of his era, like a Robert Duvall in there, I would have bought that. Even though he is like, you look at him and you see Robert Duvall, but he doesn't have like this weird Robert Duvall way of talking. I mean, does everyone have a Robert Duvall impression? No.
No, you're right.
That's the problem is that when someone has an impression, like it would be, at this point, Walken is like putting Schwarzenegger in something.
It's notable. It's distracting. Yeah.
Be like, I am the Emperor.
Austria.
There's kind of a one note with Christopher Walken.
Yeah,
it's nice to see you.
It really, really bumped me out of this.
I can see it.
It was not. This is my least happy part.
I get it. I could see the Christopher Walken casting because there is an aspect of Christopher Walken outside of the memes, which is hard to do. But old Christopher Walken was in Prophecy, and he wasn't a bunch of like just creepy movies.
A wonderful actor.
And he works when Christopher Walken gets menacing, but only when he's quiet and like in the shadows. So when he's emperor and he's out in these big rooms and he's having to command armies, you get the ladies and gentlemen, Foo Fighters, like you know, Hakonin. No.
I need more Mikey Christopher Walken in my life.
And along those same lines, while we talk about casting, Dave Bautista, I love.
He's all that good. Really,
I did
really
not
angry.
Enjoy the character.
Yeah.
I really felt like that could have been anybody.
It could have.
You know, and I really felt like they didn't let him. Not that he's got a range that we've seen.
He kind of does.
I didn't feel like we got to see anything really great out of him.
Right.
He was just like subservient dog, mm-hmm. you know?
And honestly, in the book, Raban is kind of a stooge.
Yeah,
it's kind of a
maybe that's the problem you might be having, Brad, is that you know Dave Bautista is more than a stooge.
Yes.
So they probably should have cast an actor who's more stooge
like. That's more of a Brad Dorf or a, you know, something like that.
Yeah, just
sorry, I'm going back to the first one.
Well, yeah, but a more stooge like person, yes.
Yeah.
Cuz I would agree with you there because like when he does like the runaway, seeing a Dave Bautista runaway like that hits wrong.
Yes.
Because you're like, You're like, Drax don't run away.
Yeah. Right.
It is a little weird beat, especially for like the three scenes. Like he's smashing people against consoles to say, get these rats. You know, I will kill Paul Atreides. Like, he doesn't know it's Paul Atreides, you know, but he's going after the rats himself. And then he confronts him and he's like,
that was funny and cool. And then he was like, I'm out of here.
It would have been, yeah.
It is supposed to show his like lack of care. He is a stooge. Yeah. He's the worst brother. I mean, that's why Fade steps in.
It would have been much better if he was played by someone who was a little more stooge like.
Dave Bautista's better than that.
I'm not sure who that would be.
It just seemed like he was angry all the time. Just extra angry.
Well, and the makeup didn't help. The Harkonnens suffered from poor.
Unless you get them in direct sunlight, then those pores just go away and they're porcelain, right. Man. They look great.
That milky
Instagram
white
filter.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
They had the whole blobfish thing going on.
Is that blobfish. Can you guys who are more familiar with the book, is that it came across in the movie very much that like these are black hats. They are bad. Like there's no good here.
Yeah, kind of. You know?
Yeah, the Harkonnens are very much the bad guys.
Okay. I just did because it was very even black and white, no pun intended, but it was very black and white that it's like the Hartrades are noble and good and they're trying their best in the world. And the Harkonnens are evil and bad.
Sure. Yep. And the sound effects and the soundtrack did a lot to explain that as well. Because remember, every time the Harkonnens are on screen, we're either dealing with their machines or their
dissonant tones.
It's all ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Yeah, low tones. Okay. And
I just wanted to make sure it was honoring that because that's what I was getting. It was very, I appreciated that it was kind of old school sci-fi. Good guys, bad guys, black and white.
Yeah.
You know, Empire rebels, that type of thing.
I very much agree with that. And that's virtue of the book.
And that's something that I could see a modern take trying to muddy that because that's not what people like as much anymore. People like the Breaking Bad. People like the anti-hero. People like the, you know, I can't. Sometimes he's good. Sometimes he's bad. I can't tell. What am I seeing here? Ooh, this is intriguing. But this is very much like, they are bad, very bad. Yeah.
And that's just
you should not root for them at all. And when you find out that he's part of one, that should not make you feel good.
Right. That's just a corner of the story though, because then there's all that other stuff with the Bene Gesserits and all that. Because then you're like, I don't know how to feel about them.
The Bene Gesserits behind the scenes, pulling the strings. They're the deep state.
You're right. Paul's mom. Like, you know, what's going on there? So you have to.
Well, and that also is very true to the book. They're very sneaky behind the scenes. Yes. And the
big, fear is the mind killer.
The big reveal that she's a Harkonnen, that Jessica's a Harkonnen.
I like
Harkonnen.
So that's in the book?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's in the book?
Yep.
Okay. So, I mean, it seems like he's doing a pretty good job.
In the book, it
I've been a high talk now.
it's much more. It's like it comes out earlier in the book.
Yeah.
It's not as. I don't remember the moment where Paul confronts the Harkonnen about it. I don't remember that.
Yeah, because it is out of order. Because the book is very up. Like the book tells the reader a bunch because it's the characters that don't know, and the book can hide that better. I think Villeneuve does have the challenge of people know this story. So he is trying to at least give you some surprises.
Yeah.
And because of that, he is more showing us things and not telling us things. And so when he does tell us things, they should be important. But to Kevin's point, like that's kind of what I was hinting at. Brad and I were hinting at earlier in that if you have the Dune inside you when you go into this, it is more hitting that, Harkonnen... H guys.
Tomato, tomato.
You're doing great.
Go ahead. Say it however you want, buddy.
The bad guys are really bad. Like, it's just laid on thick, and it is your classic evil black.
I mean, I understood that. Yeah. I mean, he would made sure that, like, they just randomly kill their servants.
But I think that was a beat that I don't. I'll have to rewatch it. But the beat when it is revealed that he's a Harkonnen, and, like, for the twist that it is, and the way they paste it out in the movie to make it an audience surprise, too. Mm-hmm. It something about it didn't hit, but I think I might
have surprised me.
Missed the cue. Okay,
if you want some more green, like I feel like I'm doing all the talking over, but feel free.
It is your show.
Yeah, well, I know, but feel free to jump in. the other than Christopher Walken, one of the other things that kind of, I don't know if you want to call it threw me or is a nitpick, but it was a really quick turn where Paul was like, I'm not going down south. Bad things will happen to I'm the Messiah now.
Well, it got to where he kind of had to go down south. Well, you know?
I know, but it seemed to be like,
but yes,
quick,
very quick.
And why was that poor girl left there? That was Zendaya's friend. Zendaya's really good looking friend. Why was she left
things like that
down there to burn? Like,
how come we did this?
Yeah. Why was she there?
Showing the brutality of the Harkonnens.
I guess so, but why didn't she leave?
They're brutal.
It was a sacrifice.
Why didn't she leave with everybody else?
See, I applied Fremen logic. We did get the comment that she took out 9 of his men before they captured her.
Yeah,
so
I got it.
She went down fighting. She's in Valhalla. You know, like
no, I understand.
But why? Yeah, why?
But that turn, did the turn seem fast to anybody else? It seemed really quick to me.
You're right.
He was just like 1 minute, to me it seemed at least, 1 minute he's like, I can't go south, bad things will happen. And then the next minute he's drinking the worm juice. And I was like, what just happened?
Yeah, and again, in the books, it's like a long, like he spends 2 years attacking the Harkonnens, guerrilla style.
Yep. We only got nine months, though.
Learning the ways of the Fremen and all that kind of stuff and gaining that acceptance. I don't remember in the book having such an anti-prophecy thing from the Fremen. Because that seemed to be like one of Zendaya's big drivers.
I don't remember the pushback necessarily. I remember it kind of being mentioned, but I don't remember it being such a huge... Now, Ford versus Chevy fight about.
Absolutely. And so like when you're in hindsight, the book seems to have much more Chani's prophecy non-belief in the movie seemed to be a big major factor and a big motivator for what she was doing.
Yeah.
And I didn't get any of that out of the book. There was no kind of anti-prophecy piece. It was
So nobody was anti-prophecy at all?
No, everybody kind of gets on board with it.
I wonder... But
again, it takes so much longer.
He proved himself to the people pretty early, and...
I wonder if the...
They were all, rah-rah, you're a Fremen now.
I wonder if they were looking for some kind of just conflict.
Yeah, sure.
Other than just making it just attack upon attack upon attack.
I mean, have you seen the actress? She's charming but grumpy. She looks grumpy. She looks like she's mad at something.
It's the eyebrows. It's a style.
When I had the kid, and she it was some Zendaya show that we watched on Disney Channel.
Yeah. Okay. Did she look grumpy in that?
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
She was charming then, too.
She's overly grumpy. Have you seen Spider-Man?
She doesn't seem grumpy in Spider-Man.
Okay.
I wouldn't call it grumpy. I would call it sassy.
Sassy?
Sassy.
Aloof?
Sassy.
Nah, sassy. Aloof. She's sassy.
Okay, I might be wrong.
But I hear your point, Scotty. Like, the prophecy the prophecy was part of the books, but it wasn't as contested, I guess, as it was in the movies.
Right.
I mean,
his part made sense, because he was having visions that bad things would happen if he went there.
Yeah.
And in the books, there were a lot more conversations between him and his mom.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that broke out a lot of the prophecy and spelled it out. And we heard a lot more about the Skizhet cataract or whatever that was.
I do like the neat twist of, see, but like this is something for the movie, is that she's talking for her child, her baby, right? Right.
Yeah, they're a council.
Yeah, but we also know that the mom is a liar, and we know that the baby might be a liar. So who's lying, who's really speaking?
Right.
I love that. And there's no real clear answer, so that there's a little bit of grayness there.
And his sister was Anna Taylor-Joy, right?
She's making a killing right now. She's Furiosa. She's Paul Atreides' sister. Paulette. No, that's not what she's called. I forget what she's called in the 80s movie.
She's got a name in the books, too. I can't remember it, though. Because, she's like two.
Yeah, Paulette.
It's like,
she's two, and she speaks like a 30-year-old.
I think the reason they're highlighting the prophecy is it does show, like... Just in the overall scheme of good versus evil, like our main protagonist is part of both worlds and so has to have that struggle between good versus evil. Uh-huh. So like we do get the reluctant Messiah and is totally against it. And then there is a change. Is it the poison? Is it his mom? Is it Zendaya because we don't see all their conversations.
Right.
We don't know if all their conversations are real because he sees her in flashback. And even when he sees her in flashback, those flashback change faces. So
that's true.
They always play with that perception, but it's significant that you notice, like, oh, Paul has changed, but why? You know, like, he does seem different, but is it on purpose? Is he being deceitful?
Well, I mean, I think the thing that bumped me the most is they blow up where the somehow, I guess, the new nephew figures out where the Fremen are. They didn't explain any of that. They just blow up where the Fremen. They find out somehow.
Yeah, they found Tabor.
Yeah, the whole bombers thing there.
And blow the place up. Yep. And he's like, well, I'm just going to stay here. And they're like, well, you can't stay here by yourself. And then he's like, okay. And it's just like,
right, true.
But we are going to leave my best friend here to die. That was
right.
What? I'm like, huh? But anyway, he was like, I'm going to stay here. And he was so easy to turn over. And then as soon as he gets to the south, there isn't any more conversation of like, I didn't want to be here.
Nope.
And his mom wasn't like, you got to go drink the juice. And he just went straight to the temple to drink the juice.
They didn't even give us the greeting of like them arriving in the south.
No, that's
he
what
was
I'm
just
saying.
In the temple.
No, yeah, you just all of a sudden that, you better be paying attention.
That kind of bumped me because I would have liked a scene of like, I don't want to be here. And his mom's like, you got to go drink the juice. And he's like, I ain't doing it because I don't want any of this. And she's like, you got to go do it. And then he does it. And then I would understand him because once he drank
it,
he changed.
Turn your eyes blue, man.
But there was none of that. So it was just like, it seemed like there was something cut out for time, I guess, maybe. There seemed like there was a piece missing right there.
I get it.
That's kind of bumped me.
I sense it, but it seems like he's deliberately showing the pieces that he wants.
Right.
Say he meet, you know, Denis Villeneuve, it's the whole crew and cast, but
as
the director vision, I think that's intentional and don't know the reason for it yet, but it is weird to sit with it.
Yeah.
For part two out of all three.
Yeah, and take note to the listeners, we literally saw this like 45 minutes before recording.
Sure, we're still processing.
We wouldn't let Scotty research.
Yes.
Would not let me come prepared.
We're all going into this cold.
That's what makes it fun, though.
I haven't read the books
in
30 years.
This is like sitting around with your friends, having dinner afterwards, and chatting about what you just saw.
And what I just saw.
Here's a tangent that just the last point, not last point, but one of the final points I do want to sort of make, because this is a thought I had, and I just wanted to put it to you guys to see if it's just crap or not. No, but like I've been reading a lot of interviews with Denis Villeneuve, and just as a director, I'm very curious to see what work he continues to do. And after seeing Dune 2, I'm more invested in that. But the thought I had was that something that's neat about this Dune 2 is it's very Shakespearean, but it's also like epic Shakespearean. So it's kind of like how the plebes back in the time of Shakespeare would get Shakespeare. It's this larger than life spectacle of tragedy and heroes and villains and houses and dukes.
Sure.
And it's all confusing, and there's all these characters, and their motivations are weird, but you're just bewildered by it.
It should definitely have an epic vibe.
Yep.
I mean, for what the books are.
And so one of the things that Denis Villeneuve is saying is that he's very much respectful of the craft of cinema, like film as an art unto itself, but, you know, take that as nerdy as you want. But I really think this is him trying to do, like, Shakespeare-level epic melodrama? I don't know.
Sure.
Yes, it's Dune. Yes, it's sci-fi classic, but the reason that Dune is a classic is because I think of all like the Duke and the prophecy and all the theatrics in there. I don't know. It's just very cool, and I had that thought watching it on the big screen that we're seeing almost modern Shakespeare, but I don't know. That may just be me.
Yeah, I mean, you're thinking like of one of his histories of one of the kings of England. He did tons of those. Shakespeare did.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Into the breach. All that stuff.
That's it. And all the machinations and plans within plans.
I would agree with you. It had lots of scenes. Again, I think I said it earlier. It had a lot of gravitas to them, you know, when
the salad dressing.
Give them a quarter.
Right.
That's right. Give me a quarter.
That word of the day, toilet paper, is really paying off.
That's right. One of the other things that kind of struck me outside of a derivation from the books to the movie was the entire Bene Gesserit coordinating everything. Yes, that's definitely there in the book, but I think the movies leaned into, you know, Paul accused his mother, you created this. You're a Bene Gesserit, created this, mm-hmm. which is all true. And that's something that the book doesn't really hit on, but I think the movie really does put a spotlight on of, hey, Bene Gesserit, they created this. They are this whole uprising.
Kind of this knitting circle that kind of managed all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the Bene Gesserit have been on Arrakis for hundreds of years building out all of this mythology for them to all of this stuff for them to step in and fulfill. So I like that part of the movies. Again, the books, I don't think fully got into that the way the movies did. So
I got you. I'm going to speak out of turn, but I will speak for Ralph just because I think he mentioned this in our Dune part one, is that the Bene Gesserit is one of his favorite parts about Dune, is because they are the puppet masters and the string pullers. And I don't think it is as pronounced in the books, but it is cool to see, like, they were always coming back to the spice fields being destroyed. It is cool to see that the Bene Gesserit are the deep state, like Kev was saying.
Yeah.
Like, no matter who's stabbing who, like, you cut to the sister in the black veil, and she's like, it's a setback.
Right,
but
right.
Our thousands of
As
years in planning.
Foretold.
Like, you know the mythology. They've been there for thousands of years, right. So of course that, you know, they are going to be creepy and powerful. But yeah, they're letting you know it. But even then, they seem like they're out of sorts with all the prophecy. Like, they don't even know what's going on. Like us, the audience.
Yeah, I got a feeling that they have created a Frankenstein's monster here,
Pandora's box
with Paul Atreides. That's what. And I don't know what happens in Messiah and stuff, but it really seemed like it got away from them. The fact that there's this guy who has so much power, even some of their power, he shouts down that other supreme mother or whatever.
Uses the voice.
And he's he's like, no, he's kind of like, I'm the captain now. There's
a lot of them didn't want to believe that he was the thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of, he just seems to start getting drunk with power. Like, it's like he tells Zendaya over there, he's like, yeah, I'm always going to love you, but I'm going to marry Florence Pugh so I can rule the universe.
Listen, purely for strategy.
I dig you. I'm going to marry this other broad, but I dig you.
Yeah.
For as long as I'm
a worm or something, lady.
Because I don't, you know, that's a, and I'm telling you, that right there is a tough choice.
Florence Pugh or Zendaya?
Yeah. It's a tough choice.
One name or two.
Yeah. But Zendaya's real dirty in this movie.
Everybody's dirty.
She's real sand and coarse, and she's everywhere. Is that what you're saying, Anakin?
Yeah, everything just looks itchy and dirty.
That's called a natural life. That's called freedom from
all look like
freedom from the spice fields, my friend. Drink in that sand.
That's right.
Turn your eyes blue. Well, with that, I think we can get to Ding Dong.
What?
Our pizza is here.
Our pizza's
here. Never mind. It's a giant sandworm, everybody.
Oh, God.
Do the fancy walk out of here as fast as you can.
That's not a pizza.
He rang the doorbell?
Fancy. I'm Land Shark.
Oh, it was the pizza guy knocking. That's what summoned him.
No, don't.
Yeah, I thought the punching the sand thing was kind of dumb, too.
Punching the sand for what? To summon the worm?
Yeah, well, he had to go deeper. It had to go lower and get Lower. Different sand. I don't.
You preferred he was a Gary Stu and everything came right the first time?
I guess. I don't know. I just didn't quite understand what was the.
I like Timothy Chalamet in this, let me say. Mm-hmm. Because when he was doing the sandworm thing, I like that part too. When he was going to ride the sandworm, I really liked how Javier Bardem's like, that's kind of too big. And then Chalamet slowly going like, okay, all right. Okay. All right. Okay. Yep. Okay. Okay. You know, it felt real. It felt like the
had a great build.
Yeah, it felt really like the he's like just psyching himself up. All right, you know. And I like that kind of took it out of the Gary Sue thing, because it wasn't just like, I got this, I can do this, I'm the best. There was a lot of like, I'm psyching himself up. And I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it is cool to see the struggle for sure.
Yeah.
And I think it ties into a theme that I think is on purpose of like, show you the mistakes and show you the failure almost to psych you out. And then, you know,
right.
the actual reveal will come momentarily. It may not be the first try.
That's right. A little depth of character.
Yes. All right, so pizza ratings. Our pizza ratings, for those of you who don't know, is how we rate our movies. Instead of five stars or thumbs, right. Even though that's on our logo, we do a pizza rating out of 8 slices of pizza, 1 being the worst, 8 being the best. We can add or subtract toppings. We can have different preparations of it. We can even put in sides if we really like it. It's arbitrary, and we like it that way.
Yeah.
Out of 8 slices of pizza, we usually start with the other people other than Mikey and I when they're at the round table. Who wants to go first?
Let's, Scott? For those who cannot be here.
Yes.
Ralph.
Oh, yes.
Our other Frank Herbert fan gave the first movie 1 out of 2 Meat Lover's Pizza, or half of Meat Lover's Pizza. He'll give the second half the rest of the pie, but only pepperoni and mushroom.
Okay.
So
he took some toppings off. But he didn't provide the details as why those toppings are lacking.
No money whatsoever. So, yeah.
So he gave the full pie.
Full pie. My Vegas $2 bet is because of book deviations, Scotty.
It's got to be.
Got to be.
Maybe we can find out on a future podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I would have to say I'm going 8 slices, but the first half didn't, the second half didn't grab me the way the first one did.
Okay.
It might after another rewatch or two. And, this is my immediate first take was, all right, okay. I don't know that it was that great. So it's going to be 8 slices of cheese.
Fair enough.
8 slices of cheese pizza.
But you're going to order from that place again. You're going to rewatch this movie. Okay.
Yeah, sure. Mine's 2 slices of gas station pizza.
Ooh, harsh. Brad didn't like it. Give us your critique, Brad.
My concerns were I had said it to Scott as we left. It insisted upon itself. It relied on your love of
this
property.
That's a reason
property.
To not like The Godfather.
Yes.
Not.
It insists on itself.
He's bringing it back.
No, I felt regardless of your level of knowledge coming into this, it was a bit of a, hey, we're going to make up for a soundtrack where you have popular music or even a recognizable string sound with just, bah. And we're going to have incredible lighting. And then, my goodness, I have never been to a movie where I felt like maybe I should have brought my sunglasses with me. Because we're like, dark, 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 bright, bright, bright.
When you go out in the sun, out in the desert,
it was
bright.
It was really rough, some of those transitions.
It was like walking out of a movie theater after
finishing. It was really rough.
Movie.
And then I would have given it 6 pieces of pizza, but I had to subtract the number of times I fell asleep. So 2 pieces.
I can't wrap my head around that.
Mikey elbowed me 4 times during this movie. How did I not fall asleep during this movie? Hold my attention. Not hold my hand. Hold my attention. So I give it 2 pieces of gas station pizza.
From the
what are the toppings?
Joke
I don't know. Some sort of unidentifiable meat. One of them is circular. One of them is crumbly. Might be sausage. Might be pepperoni. I don't know. But there's my rating. 2 slices. And I feel like this is vindicative.
Indicative?
That's not the right word.
Indicative.
Vindicative. I think I might be making up
Vin
for
Diesel?
It. I feel like I usually take 8 slices and I usually am all happy, happy, joy, joy about everything. Here's one I wasn't really that fond of.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, you're dumb.
Oh, okay.
And I read all the books and I've seen all the media before this. So.
In a more polite term, I think it just may not be for you, Brad.
This wasn't for me.
It's so funny that the sound design put you to sleep, though.
It really did.
it's like white noise for him.
I know.
It really was.
But it just makes it so funny because we'll jump to my pizza rating and that one of the things I love about this movie, in addition to the things I gush about and I will repeat here, but the sound design is amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm the deaf guy. And so to hear that, like, what I find incredibly captivating, you were just like, oh, peaceful. Yeah. I get it. Because it is weird noises. Sleep. It's alien noises. But we've never been in this world before. We don't know how it's supposed to sound. I have the nitpicks with the vocals, the Christopher Walkens that you brought up.
Oh, gosh.
That is a nitpick for me. I do think Christopher Walken works when he's quiet and menacing, which he has like 2 scenes of. Mm. And those 2 scenes work. And I think he might have auditioned with those 2 scenes. And they were like, oh, we already paid him. So Christopher Walken did bump me a little bit, but I want to watch both part one and part two more. I was dumb. I didn't know we were getting a part three. I thought this was wrapping up. I know they had a lot of story to tell, but I was like, one and two, done. But I had no idea we were getting a part three, so I'm even more invested. And my nitpicks, I will still have to hold until I see all three, but this is the middle of the sandwich. This is all meat. This is all action, and it's a great time. And my tangent, it was Shakespeare writ large. I will probably write a thesis on that to better explain it, but that's the end of my ramble. I'm giving this 8 slices, supreme.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm filling in the pizza, and I'll just order
it. You filled the rest of the pizza in because you gave it 5 supreme before, so yep. You filled it in.
I'm definitely on Team Mikey. The sound design, I kind of dug it because it has a lot of like dissonant tones in it. That's wasn't supposed to make you feel uncomfortable. Yeah. It's supposed to make you.
It made me have to poop.
That's the brown note.
Okay. As I had mentioned earlier, I gave the first one 8 slices of cheese, waiting to see if any toppings would be added by the second half. Oh. And despite my nitpicks, despite the quick transition of Timothy Shamalema Ding Dong, which makes me laugh because Florence Pugh came up with that and she's in this, and Christopher Walken, I did enjoy myself. It is a good continuation. It almost is a thing that needs to be seen with the first one, if you can spend that much time.
Full day.
But I've done that before with Lord of the Rings, so why not with Dune? So it will retain its 8 slices. As for the toppings, though, I can't give it supreme because Christopher Walken bumps me so much.
Is Christopher Walken, no problem.
But you know what I think, actually? This is what I'm going to do. I think it is a multiple topping pizza. It has lots of toppings on it. But Christopher Walken is a topping I don't like on there.
And you can't pick it out.
And I don't know.
So you're going to hold the Christopher Walken?
I'm not sure exactly what it is. Maybe pineapple. I'm not a fan of pineapple on my pizza. But
it's ridiculous.
But, well, I'm not a fan of it.
Back me up.
Hey, but the thing is that.
Hey.
But has everyone. Do they don't put pineapple on a supreme pizza?
Nope.
See, that's kind of weird. I can't think of a weird topping because even I can even handle an anchovy over here, but
sure.
There's just something. Maybe you know what? Maybe it is. Maybe Christopher Walken's like jalapenos.
Like
I can take a slice with jalapenos on it, but if I'm gonna have to eat a whole pizza with jalapenos, I'm gonna get acid reflux. It's gonna be bad.
Christopher Walken is the jalapenos.
Yeah. So I can't do it with that. But it's a great pizza. It's good.
I can
probably pick off the Christopher Walken.
Around it.
Maybe somebody someday will do like a Jar Jar Binks thing where they made him have of alien language and subtitle it. Maybe they can like dub over Christopher Walken with like some actual menacing voice. But either way, it still retains its 8 slices. It's a good time. It's a good continuation of the story. I enjoyed it.
There you go. So everybody but Brad loved it. That means you're wrong, right. Brad.
No, it doesn't.
I just think I said that.
Yeah.
As we've discussed on this podcast numerous times, everyone can have their opinion.
Yeah.
Scott can think they're all wrong, but Scott can also be wrong.
Probably not.
But remarkably, you know what? Regardless of what I said, I enjoyed my time this evening. I got a great nap in. No, I enjoyed spending time with my friends. We had a wonderful time going to the movie. It was a well put together movie. I just had my problems with it, much like Kevin hates Christopher Walken.
So I don't hate him, not in this role. In this role, it doesn't work.
He's anachronistic. He's too Christopher Walken.
Yeah, he's too Christopher. He's anachronistic. That's the best thing, Mikey.
That's great.
It's like, yeah. What we need for these Atreides is more cowbell. I can't do his voice, but
anyway. How's Hakonin?
Miss you, Ralph.
Fighters.
Adopters.
Now you. It's really funny because Mikey's almost doing him, but also doing somebody else who I'm not sure who he's doing.
It's not even close, but you know it's Walken, and that's what he sounds like when he talks.
This might be a little bit. Anyway,
they didn't even try an accent.
You guys know what we think. We want to know what you think. Hit us up on our social medias at Assuming Pod. That's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of them. Just look for at Assuming Pod.
Were you about to swallow your microphone?
Maybe. What does it look like I'm doing?
We're either on there. We're either on there or not. Just put at Assuming Pod. You can also Gmail us, assumingpositions@gmail.com.
Please do.
Every week we challenge Mikey with how you'd like the Gmail formatted, but I think we should make Brad do it this time.
Ooh, yeah.
How do you want the Gmail formatted?
I guess we're going to have to get it in either your choice of Arrakian or Harkonnen.
Oh.
It's going to have to be in Dune language, written in the language of spice.
Oh. I like it.
Language of spice.
And sent on a cylinder of silver with your signet on the end.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Then I can drop dramatically as I walk into my giant back garden.
Yes. That's exactly right.
I've forgotten how to read.
If you guys want to support all we do here, podcasting is not free. You can buy us a coffee. buymeacoffee.com/assumingpod. We also want to thank you guys so much for listening. You are the best positrons that ever were. And we also want to thank That Guy Brad for being here and doing our announcing. And we want to thank Not Scott Productions for our equipment and being here.
Good to be with you.
We want to thank Jazzar for music and being in France. See you guys next week for some more fun stuff.
Please listen carefully.
Fear is the mind killer. Wow.
Brad's falling asleep now. Brad's falling asleep.
Look at my throat singing.
Of that sound.